welcome back to A Book A Day podcast. This is your host, Deepak Rana, and I'm back with more books, more stories. Now, if you remember, in the previous episode, I shared a Punjabi story with you. And this time, I'm going to share a Sindhi short story. The story is called Manjri, and it was written by Lekhraj Tulsiani. Once again, just like the previous one, this is a simple story. Not much really happens in the course of the story, but as you will find out, just through a few glimpses, a few scenes, the story really tells you about the wider culture, the wider societal values, and what's going on there. So, without revealing too much what happens in it, let me start narrating the story. The story, as I said, is called Manjri. It was written by Lekhraj Tulsiani in Sindhi language. But here I am with the translation in English. So, let's start. The atmosphere of a Mufassil court of law is not expected to be attractive. That of the Mirpur Khas court is no exception. A commonplace building with no beauty of construction, no high tower, no big round pillars, no imposing dome. As you enter the courtyard, there's nothing but dust to greet you, and an air of desolation hangs all around. But in the midst of that desolation, there is a simple spot where one could rest for a while. In front of the courthouse, there are half a dozen large trees, 4 neem and 2 tali. That is the best resting place in Mirpur Khas court. Look at the trunk of each tree, its branches, its twigs. They are not trees, they are monsters. And the wind of Mirpur Khas, when the branches of those trees wave in the wind, monsters appear to be dancing. Under one of the neem trees, Manjri was seated. She was just a low-caste Koli girl, but there was magic in her eyes, a magnet in her limbs. The eyes of every passerby were attracted to her. But today, clouds of sorrow had gathered on her round face. The luster of her eyes had dimmed, and her red lips appeared colorless. She wore a tattered skirt, and her blouse could hardly conceal her brimming youth. Her chunni was waving in the wind, her long hair tied up with twine, fell disheveled about her face, and as she pushed it back, an alluring delicacy was revealed. What natural grace, no need of an artifice or blandishment. Opposite Manjri, about 100 steps away, under a tali tree, sat a young man, handcuffed, a policeman standing by with a musket on his shoulder. The youth did not appear to be over 24 years of age. He had a brown, sunburnt face, strong arms, and broad chest. He wore a torn, dirty shirt and a coarse, printed loincloth. Manjri was glancing at him every now and then, and lowering her eyes again. At times, a long sigh escaped her. All her world was centered on that young man. Was he not enduring these difficult days on her account? The young man, too, was looking at Manjri at frequent intervals, but there was no trace of suffering on his face. His looks were giving a message to Manjri, Don't lose heart, dear. Even the scaffold would be my wedding couch, Manjri. At the call of the court, the policeman took the youth inside the building. After some time, the Naik loudly called thrice, "Is Musammat Manjri present?" Manjri, who was absorbed in her thoughts, was startled. She arose, collecting her wits, and moved towards the courtroom. There was a strange fascination in her gait. The Naik stared at her and twirled his moustache. She entered the courtroom like a nervous deer, and all eyes, as they were drawn to her, grew wonderstruck. A voice said, whispering, "What an attractive woman! Who would say she was a mere Koli girl? Look how the woman walks like a proud peon." Manjri hesitated before the witness box. The magistrate pompously ordered, "Get into the box, woman. What are you looking at?" Manjri did not hesitate anymore. She had come resolved to save ISRO. Although she had no idea of the intricacies of the law and the cross-examination of advocates, her firm resolve acted on her as a solace. She entered the witness box, and the court clerk administered to her the oath that she would speak the truth, nothing but the truth. While making her statement, Manjri faltered a little at first, but soon got herself under control. Then she began. "My parents were under debt to Mangal. In lieu of that debt, I was married to him. Mangal was an opium eater. Every evening he used to take opium and come home in a semi-conscious condition. Every night he used to oppress me, and on my refusal to satisfy him, he used to beat me up. He thrashed me more and more violently every day. After 3 months, the house became a hell for me, but I was newly married and bore everything with patience. One midday, I was carrying Mangal's food to the field where he worked. ISRO's plot of land was near that of Mangal, just across the boundary. ISRO was in his field digging a watercourse with his shovel. He had nothing on his body but his loincloth. He was exhausted digging with his shovel, and drops of sweat shone on his body. Broad chest, powerful shoulders, and large sharp eyes. He was young, attractive. I stopped short. On the previous night, Mangal had beaten me severely, and my limbs were aching. I called out to ISRO and began chatting with him at random. He was not particularly interested in me. I induced him to come over to the shade of a tree. The watercourse was running on one side, and on its bank was a row of bushes. That's how we knew each other, and our intimacy increased every day. ISRO never came to my house. I managed to meet him somehow or the other." She faltered and added after a while, "In this case, which Mangal has filed against ISRO for seducing me, ISRO is not to blame. He is faultless. It is all my fault, and I am prepared for the punishment." One pleader remarked, "The whore has turned blind with love." Another one said, "Can't you give her credit for making her statement so boldly and frankly?" The magistrate smiled faintly and, turning to the advocates, said, "The time has come when women seducers should be punished instead of men seducers." The next day, he delivered the following judgment. Although Musammat Manjri states, and there is a certain amount of sincerity in her statement, that it was she who seduced Isro and that Isro is not to blame, still from the legal viewpoint, Isro is the culprit, because according to law, man alone can be the seducer. Isro, the accused, has not defended himself and has confessed his illicit relations with Manjri. And on that account too, he is the guilty one. But out of mercy, the court allots him the punishment of 2 months rigorous imprisonment only. Manjri's eyes were involuntarily filled with tears. The lover for whom she had done so much, for whom she had shamelessly made such a statement in the open court, she had failed to save that devoted lover. She drew a long breath and looked at Isro. He was smiling faintly. As the policemen were conducting him about, he passed by Manjri and whispered, "I'm a man. The period of imprisonment will pass quickly, dear." In that single sentence, Isro poured all his heart out to Manjri. One pleader said to another, "Look, the slut is shedding tears for her illegitimate love." The other replied, "Friend, such love cannot be legitimate. This poor girl's tears are also priceless, arising from the depth of her soul." The policeman took Isro away. With bowed head and faltering steps, Manjri walked out of the court like a defeated soldier. So that was the story, and I hope you really enjoyed it. Let me know your thoughts, what you think of these 20th century Indian writers writing in regional languages. Do they feel inspired by their Western counterparts? Do you see that kind of inspiration being drawn from the British writers who were then the rulers of the land? Or do you see this storytelling as an indigenous way of theirs? Let me know how you see them. Let me know how much you like them. And I'll be happy to hear your thoughts. And I'll be back with more stories the next time. Thank you. Thank you very much for listening.